Colonel Jones, Reel 6. I mean, one of the sort of features of Army life is religion and the Padre and so on. Do you have memories of Padres that you had with you at all?
Yes. I remember the one in Londonderry. His name was Jones. Coming into the mess crying, said, "We've lost the war, we've got to surrender." And I took him outside and said, "Well, look, I don't think it's quite the right sentiments to express. I think you better go and to your room for a bit and get organized." That's about the only time that I disagreed with the parsons. In Burma, we had a very good one who got an MC, and chaplains don't. Padres don't get MCs very easily. Well, and the doctor got one as well, and they don't get them.
What was the Padre's name?
Claxton.
Right.
He was chaplain to the Queen. He's still around. Gus. Mm-hmm. He was a great guy. And
what did he get his MC for? Was that a particular action? Or?
No, it was over a period of a time, I think, and the fact that he would try to get out to casualties who stretcher bearers couldn't get to. You know, he's putting his faith in somebody that we didn't know much about, I feel. But he was a great character, was Gus. He was very good at seeing to burials. He organized that beautifully, I thought. He had a lot of experience because he was with them for the whole of the fighting.
Because that must have been quite a routine thing.
Yes, it was. Yes.
How did the burial party people cope with that? Because I mean, they were burying their, you know, comrades, weren't they?
Yes, but you normally tried to get you wouldn't get the same chaps from the same company, should we say? You try to get a burial party from somewhere else. Made it a bit easier. But I would guess that their feelings were, thank God I'm alive anyway, and bad luck on Bill. I think so. Mm.
Mm. And the doctor who got the MC, who was that?
Joe Chamberlain, right. Yes, dear old Joe. Because Joe would carry on under fire. You know, I remember at Yeo, shells bursting in the trees and we were getting splattered with shrapnel. And he was taking no notice at all. I mean, I was looking up to see the next piece coming down, but he was carrying on with his surgery. Mm.
Amazing. So you met an amazing number of people, didn't you?
I think so. I mean, quite fine people, yes, undoubtedly, yes.
So the REMC, I mean, were they universally well thought of?
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, yes.
Mm. I leave, yeah. If you like.
embarrassing you, is it?
So, I mean, some people, I mean, some men, no doubt, didn't cope with the stress of battle, the noise and so on. I mean, you had cases.
No, you remind me. Now, I took one court-martial in Burma. A chap who deserted, he was absent for 12 months. He was picked up in the pleasure spots of Calcutta and brought back to us. And I was told to make sure that the sentence was fairly severe as an example to the others.
Right. So you were...
I was president of the court-martial. And it was held in a nullah, a dried stream bed.
And who would be there?
There were two young officers. One was the captain and one was the subaltern. And the padre was there to speak on behalf of the accused. But although he spoke very well, He didn't intend it to be real, so to speak. I feel that he regarded the crime as bad as any of us, because this chap had walked out and left his comrades. So I persuaded, with some pressure on them, the other two members of the court-martial to make it 7 years in jail. The one young subaltern said it was far too much. I said, well, you've only been here 5 minutes. You haven't seen what these chaps have been through without their comrade. So anyway, I signed it 7 years. And about a month later, I got a message from General Auchinleck, Commander-in-Chief India. I must tell you, I've reduced your sentence to 4 years. You have no idea how bad the Indian jails are. I thought it was rather a nice way of putting it. So the chap got 4 years.
Right. Mm. Who was it that told you to give him an exemplary sentence?
My CO, Geoffrey White. Yeah.
Okay. What did the other men think about?
I think they were in agreement with the sentence, yes.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, he had just gone AWOL.
Well, yes, exactly, yes.
I mean, he must have got people who were bomb happy or who broke down.
It was only later on, and mostly since the war, that they've taken this psychological effect into account at all, I feel.
But did you ever see any officers or men who, broke down?
No, I didn't, I didn't.
Fell apart?
No. I think that possibly what would happen is that before things got too bad, he would get as far as the RAP anyway, and then the doctor would ship him out with a... Probably wouldn't realise that they'd gone, almost.
Right. So if you saw someone had gone wobbly...
Yes, get him down, yes.
Right.
Yeah, pass the buck a bit quickly, but I think if you thought it was genuine, you'd pass him down.
Right.
Yeah.
So the doctor was really quite an influential person.
Oh, very much so, yes. Well, and the padre, too. A good padre had a wonderful effect on the morale.
What other Allied troops did you have contact with abroad?
A little with the Americans, not very much.
Where did you meet them?
They were training near us in Ranchi. They had a Chinese division there with the American advisors, and they used to come over occasionally to see us. And I got to know the American Air Force a bit in the Arakan, because they were doing bombing for us.
Right. When you say you got to know them, I mean...
Well, they would come down and discuss operations and perhaps have a drink. Mm-hmm. Yes, but...
How did you rate them compared to the RAF?
Well, they seemed to be very efficient. Oh, yes, they were. And always very helpful.
Did they have more goodies than you?
Well, I don't know. I didn't get to that side of it. They were at our headquarters, not way back in there. I expect it was very different.
Any other Allied troops the Indians?
Well, Indian, of course, well, yes. I didn't have a lot to do with the Indian Army. And I was, what I saw of them was very good. I told you I had this message from the Ork, but before that, when I was in the Arakan, Southeast Asia Command was formed with Mountbatten, and India Command then gave up the fighting troops in Burma and the Arakan, handed them over to Southeast Asia. And Auchinleck, who was the Commander-in-Chief of the Indian Army, Field Marshal, came down to say goodbye to the Indian troops. And I went with him and drove him that day. And it was wonderful to see Subedar Major, which is the senior rank, then was the senior rank to Indian non-commissioned officers. And there were very few commissioned Indian officers in those days. They were almost bursting with pride, talking to the great Saab. He was a wonderful character, was the Ork. I had a wonderful day driving him down in the Arakan that day.
Did he talk to you much?
Oh, yes, in their own language, of course. And Bill Slim did that. He was very clever at that. Mm. He could talk to a Gurkha one moment and a Sikh the next, and a Madrasi the next, all in their own tongue.
And Auchinleck talked to you, did he? Was he chatting?
Oh yes, very.
Mm. What did you talk about?
Well, everything generally. I don't think he probably knew more about the what was going on than I did, so he didn't question me a lot, but it was very general.
So you met many of the great names.
Well, I assume to have. I saw Mountbatten, but I didn't meet him. Uh-huh. Yeah. But what was the general who came, 11th Army Group? He was well known in the desert, well thought of by Churchill, but we didn't think a lot of him.
I don't know. Did you see any cases of self-inflicted wounds?
No.
No.
Right. I heard of a couple of rumours, but we didn't talk about them a lot.
Mm. Right. Would you like a cup of coffee before you go?
How important were letters home and letters to home and from home?
Oh, vital. I think the top priority. Yeah. Yes, I can't think of anything more important.
Who did you write to?
I had a wife and a small child, yeah, and my parents, but normally to my wife. Mm. The first wife, not the second one.
So.
We had these airmail things at the end. Of course, originally it was normal stationery. Mm. But at the end, was it the airmail letter or something it was called? We were allowed one a week, I think. What I used to hate was censoring the letters.
Mm. What sort of things were you cutting out of letters?
Very little.
Because people knew not to mention where exactly they were.
Well, they knew that, but they quite often would, you know. If they were trying to suggest where they were, I let it go. It wasn't going to get into foreign hands anyway, I felt. Mm. But
so were they allowed to say we're in Southeast Asia or?
Yes. Yeah. I think they could give a broad, even a bit more detailed than that. Mm. But not the Arakan or Northwest Burma. They could say Burma, but no nearer than that. Mm.
Did you get any other things you had to censor out?
No, I can't remember anything. No, yeah. A lot of personal things that one felt you shouldn't be reading. But there we are. You. Mm.
So, were your letters censored?
No.
Right. So, officers could write them?
We were expected to censor our own.
Right. Mm. So, how often did you get mail?
Oh, it was, I think, fairly frequently. Mm. Yes, I don't think it was much of a hold-up. I think perhaps 10 days or a fortnight would be long from England to the front line in Burma.
So it was certainly given some priority.
Yes. Mm. I remember when I lost this pipe on the Irrawaddy, it was an old copy of Punch, I don't know how old it was, not too old, but a copy of Punch somewhere wandering around in my kit, and I saw an advert for pipes, Warlick pipes. So I wrote to them a pathetic letter saying I'd lost this. I'd always smoked their pipes. I never heard of them before, but I said, I always smoked your pipes, and I've just lost the last one. Would you please send me two? And send the account to Mrs. Jones. She was living here then, Brenda Owen. And I said, come on. Well, she had the letter. She had the request from them for the money. Before she had a letter from me telling her that I bought her some pipes and would she pay for them. I had them in about a fortnight. I was never a cigarette smoker and I smoked pipe then. I think it was probably sheer boredom and the fact that we were having either delivered to us or even airdropped to us at times wooden cases of tobacco containing 36 tins of tobacco and we were burying them because nobody wanted them. So I think I was trying to be patriotic and smoke army tobacco. But I got fed up with it and eventually I arranged to have some from the Army and Navy stores in Calcutta. And we had a young officer, what was his name, yeah, with a K, killed at Kohima. And I wrote to his parents saying we're very sorry, John, his name was John, I remember that. He was killed, he died very bravely and the usual thing. And a couple of days after that, a very obvious tin of tobacco arrived for him. So I put it one side, got a reply from them, and I wrote back then. They wrote to thank me for the letter. I wrote back and said, look, I've had this. What do you want me to do with it? So the father wrote and said that he was always sending John one once a month, and he would send it to me if I can make use of it. So I wrote back, thank you very much. And he then did it till the end of the war. So I was getting Balkan Sobrani as well, for free.
I mean, that must have been one of your duties, was it, writing?
Yes. Yes, yes.
You must have, how many letters do you think you've written to
them? I didn't do many, because I used to make the platoon commanders, you know, the chaps who were really living next door to them or with them. And then I'd edit it to make sure they're the right sentiment. Mm. And,
how quickly would they get written? Fairly quickly.
Oh, yes, within 2 days. Yes, we tried to anyway, yes. Yeah. Yes.
What sorts of things would you say?
Well, you had to really paint the picture that they died in battle, you know, under heroic circumstances, that they were very good soldiers, we were missing them, and a heartfelt sympathy to them. Mm. Yes. It was more or less almost a standard pattern. You just altered a word here and there, now and then. But I mean, they were going to Scotland, Penzance, Dorchester, all over the place. So there was no chance of them being read by two being read by one person.
So I mean, in all wars, an awful lot of people die in road accidents, don't they? And you know, sort of friendly fire, or you know, any number of ways apart from being shot by the enemy.
Yes.
So, but you treated them all the same.
Yes. Even if it was a very questionable death, you were one of ours. I mean, you didn't dare say that there was a friendly fire. We'd never heard of friendly fire. So yes, there was other silly buggers up the road.
So you didn't come across any cases of so-called friendly fire?
You know? Oh, yes. That's the Air Force. Mm-hmm. Yes. And our own gunners. In fact, the last but one day when we were at Mount Popper, I was lying on the top of a slope with the gunner officer. We were trying to pick out this wretched gun that was annoying us. And he fired, ordered a round to be fired, a ranging round, and it landed behind me. Covered us all with dirt. And he said, oh, don't worry, we won't get many of those. I said, but we won't get another one as far as I'm concerned either. But, yes, we had the Air Force attack us once at Dirty Pagoda. I called for an airstrike, and it came in the wrong direction. And the British Army in the field, you know, everybody else camouflages themselves, but we were standing out with no shirts on and waving towels and various things. Anybody could see us, and still we were attacked by the fighters. We do no casualties. We were lucky.
Right. So how good were your communications between, say, the Air Force?
They varied a lot. Normally with the Air Force, you had an Air Force officer with you with his own communications, and he did a direct to the fighters. Yes. Communication weren't bad, but we always found the gunners had better sets than us. So if you were in trouble, you got the nearest gunner and got him to use his set. Mm. We always liked that, because in the jungle, of course, the infantry sets were very, very unreliable. It was much better to send a runner if you could.
Mm. Where do you think the British Army fell down on its equipment, really, in a big way?
Not adventurous enough, possibly. I think the Americans probably were prepared to risk things and they got away with it, whereas we were the tried methods of the Boer War and the 1418, I feel that. You know, we always did it that way and it worked. My grandfather told me so.
You've obviously got a great pride in what the Monmouths should.
Yes.
Yeah. How important... I mean, you've been with other...
Well, you get it, yes, whatever you're with, really, it moves with you. Yes, I mean, when you're with a Dorset, you're a Dorset man. Yes, I think so.
So you switch from one to another, really?
Yes, of course, in the army, you're still in your original regiment. and you're attached or posted to somebody else. But eventually, when the day comes that you leave them, you go back to your, in the war house, you go back to your old regiment. So you always got that there. And of course, I had such close connections with the 3rd Mons before the war and after, and now with the old comrades, that it probably is my number one.
That's where your heart is.
Yeah, oh yes.
How do you? I mean, you seem to have fared very well as far as the sort of mental and physical effects of warfare.
Yes, I'd like to think I did anyway.
Mm. How do you see it in your other old comrades? Do you see people dwelling on it more now as they get older, perhaps?
Yes, I think so. Probably I can take my cousin as an example. He was 3rd Mons, but served with independent company in Norway, went to the Middle East, was trained for Yugoslavia, went to Italy, and finally stopped a 88mm on D-Day. I think it's affected him, but more physically than mentally, because he was so badly wounded. But I think that possibly it's made a slight difference, although he's pretty happy-go-lucky. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we're a bit odd in our family.
Yeah. What about the other old comrades you meet in the association?
Yes, I think they're all right. Yes, I haven't noticed anything too peculiar about them. I've met people in other walks of life, and I meet one now who was a prisoner of war with the Japs. I think it affected them more. Mm-hmm. They were badly affected. Mm-hmm. Of course, we didn't know anything about that at the time, as I said earlier.
I think I've nearly come to the end of my questions. What else do you... I haven't covered everything, I'm sure. I mean, your head is full of things. What else would you like to mention?
I can't think of anything now. It'll probably come to me tonight or tomorrow. I wish I'd said so and so.
Yes, yeah. Any particular ordinary soldiers you remember?
Well, I remember Sibley very well, of course. Mm. And my Gurkha orderly in... in the Arakan.
What was his name?
They all have a Bahadur in it, which means brave man. So I think, as far as I can remember now, that was the only one I used.
It's all a long time ago, but thank you.
It
very
is.
Much.
It's, yeah. Well,
thank you very much.
I'm surprised that I've remembered so much, quite
you
honestly.
Plenty.
I hope I haven't exaggerated anything, and it gives the impression that it wasn't Errol Flynn who won the war in Burma, but me.
Colonel Jones, thank you very much indeed. That's the end of Reel 6.